Welcome to the Level Up Artists Podcast. We're your hosts, Adriana Amay and
Jackie Sanders. We are two art professionals sharing for the advice and business lessons we have learned along our creative journeys.
We talk to artists, leaders, and art professionals to demystify the creative process and discover new ways to succeed as a career-minded artist.
If you find value in these conversations, please go ahead and subscribe. This will help other creatives like you find our podcast, and you'll be notified when we drop an episode every Tuesday.
So welcome, everybody. On today's session, we're partnering with Triangle Artworks, one of our local arts nonprofit, as well as Torrance Reed from Cyber Shield Security, for a lunch and learn type of session in which we can discuss all things cybersecurity. But before we get started, let's do a quick introduction.
Yes. So for those of you who are not familiar, Torrance is an award-winning cybersecurity professional, investor, and travel enthusiast. He currently serves as the CEO of CyberShield Security, a cybersecurity company he founded that helps entrepreneurs, organizations, and government agencies implement IT security and compliance at the enterprise level. Through his consulting, software, and training accelerator, he's helped clients and customers protect their information, achieve their goals, and secure their dreams. When he is not heads down in the cyber world, he can be found traveling, spending time tickling his kids, and outside in the grass down doing lawn care. He is a proud graduate of North Carolina Agriculture and Technical State University in Greensboro, North Carolina, where he majored in management information systems. Very impressive.
Yeah, and that's the formal introduction, of course, but Torrance is going to be diving into all things cybersecurity, and then we're going to be addressing questions at the end of the presentation. For those folks that may be listening to this in their car, or maybe they have their hands dirty while they're working in the studio, there will be a video version of this that lives on YouTube. We will be linking all of this, of course, where you are going to be able to see any of the slides that Torrance puts on. But otherwise, he's going to be verbally sharing with us a lot about this cybersecurity world. So without further ado, Torrance, we'll pass it on to you.
So as the lovely moderator stated, I'm Torrance. I'm the CEO of CyberShield Security. And I'm going to speak today again from the lens of a creative, an art administrator, a community manager, et cetera, right? So I always start my presentations with a quote that's relevant to what who I'm speaking to. And to me, art is the purest form of existence is to create freely, right? And when I started thinking about how that relates to cyber, I thought about ultimately what you all are trying to do is create and share your art, right? Without the existence of cyber intrusion or malicious individuals, right? So everything isn't always technical for me, even though I'm technical. So that's a lens that I think about it from, right? Like you're being prohibited from sharing your creativity if cybersecurity is prohibiting you from functioning properly. So a little bit about me. I've always found that if you know a little bit about the presenter, you might pay attention a little bit more. So I've been an information security consultant for about 20 years. As stated, I have three kids that I tickle every day. And that is not an exaggeration. I tickle them every single day. I love traveling. I think it's the only thing that is worth going broke over, traveling. I went to North Carolina A&T State University. And if there are any Redskins fans on the call, I'm going to gladly hack into your systems when this is over, because I'm a proud Dallas Cowboys fan.
No, he won't. Disclaimer.
Okay, so why am I here and what am I doing? And what have I been doing for the last 10 years or so? I wanted to make IT security less complex, right? In the world we live in, it's very hard to implement something and understand its effect and its value to you if it's very complex. And being that cyber is, it was a siloed part of technology. Every other part of technology had its reckoning point where it became easy to understand, but cybersecurity was still off over here to the side as a complex thing. And so that's been my vision to make it a little bit less complex, while helping my customers protect their dreams, because as you all know, most of the businesses in this country are small businesses. So these are all the companies that I have either built, deployed cyber for, implemented a security program, deployed security applications, consulted on compliance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are startups. These are government agencies, many of which run your life or have something to do with your life daily. Nonprofit organizations, 2-person entities, 20,000-person entities. The one thing they all have in common is that they all need cybersecurity. There is no escaping it. In the world and landscape that we live in, given the fact that if you have an online business, you're more than likely using anywhere from 20 to 25 different pieces of software to operate your business. You can't escape it. It's not possible. And if you are operating thinking that it hasn't happened to me yet, then that's not a great thought process to move with, because half of the companies on this page also had a breach, right? It's the inevitable. You should think about when this will happen to me and not if. And what will the magnitude of it be, given the mitigation that I've put in place prior, right? Meaning, if someone hacks into my email, have I set up administrative notifications to be notified immediately, right? That dials back the damage they can do because I didn't find out 10 hours later, right? So we're going to talk about our AI and intellectual property. And I know you all may be not understanding how intellectual property deals with cyber, but given the platforms that most of you all use, it more than likely does. How do you protect that data that you all are ingesting into these platforms? Right? And then if you all have any questions, I will more than gladly answer those. So let's get to the nitty-gritty and why we're here. Did some research. Not sure who's using what, but if you are an artist or a creative, I can assume some of you all on the phone are using these platforms. And so what I wanted to introduce to you was a different thought process. You will not function in a manner until you think in a manner, right? And so cybersecurity is, antivirus and this two-factor authentication and this, complex passwords. But a bigger part of cybersecurity is business continuity and disaster recovery. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up and speaking to you all is you're more than likely ingesting an uncountable amount of IP into these platforms on a regular basis. Right. And so, granted, it is a tool, granted, it is a resource, but from this lens of a cybersecurity standpoint, a backup and disaster recovery strategy is part of having proper cybersecurity. If someone takes your stuff down off of the internet, can you service your customers and put it back up on the internet very quickly? Again, now I'll get to why I just showed you all those platforms, but I want to introduce this thought to you first. Backups are important. The reason you all use those platforms is because it's great, right? Like, they're simple. The UI is easy. You can upload things easy. I have backups. I can, right? I can see my stuff easily. From a cybersecurity standpoint, you should always have two copies of your most important media and data. Right. In the technology world, they usually say you should have two copies of every piece of data that you have, right? Now, given that you could be uploading audio, digital, video, and a combination of all of those types of files, right? If your business consists of heavy file management, you only may care about the most important ones, or the ones from the last year, or the ones that you don't have in X platform, but you have them in Y platform. Thinking about being able to get your stuff to download your is important for your cybersecurity strategy. Now, those platforms are huge. They're large. There's probably hundreds of millions of people using each one. And so that means they're inevitably going to go down the AI road. Now, my question for you is to think about, it will all play back to cybersecurity, right? What I usually not try to do, what I don't ever want to do, is fire off a list of things you could turn on and off, right? That's not going to work, right? You don't have them turned on or off already. The bigger point that I want to make is if you start to think differently about some of these things on the screen, they will fall forward into you having to fix your security and the protection of your data, right? And so when you think about, is your data your data? These systems are going to train your AI models. Now, the reason that is a cybersecurity, the reason that has cybersecurity ramifications is, does that mean your IP is out there in the wild? Right? And so what you'll probably never do is pour through the 73 pages of the terms and agreements, right? The little click box that you check when you signed up for an account, you're probably never going to read that. What you can do is ping support, right? Behance, Etsy, all of these platforms have support. Ask them several questions. Do I own my data or do you all own it? And that's a real question. You may think you own it because you're creating it and you're uploading it, but when you hit that upload button, you might have changed some things. So you want to know them because you want to know where your data will end up at on the internet. Do you own it or do they own The other thing is, if you aren't able to, if there isn't an export button in the interface, ask support, how do I get all of my data if I want it? How do I make a blanket download of every piece of IP that I've uploaded to your platforms? Because after they answer your question about where your data is going to be at, you might not want to have it on that platform anymore. Right? AI. It's been all the rave. It is, from an artistic and creative standpoint, probably going to have a immediately heavier impact versus some other industries, right? And so what cybersecurity will have to do is find the balancing act of human judgment and ethics and versus AI. Now, you all may ask, why is that important to me? Much of what you do is emotional intelligence related, right? And a lot of cybersecurity is common sense related, right? Ultimately means, when I say common sense, I mean, if you get your tax documents at home for your job, you file them in a locked file cabinet, right? You already move through your day and life in a security first mindset, right? You don't want to break into your house. You don't want anyone to get your deed or your wills that's in your safe in your closet, right? You already move that way. So if you think about moving that same manner in regards to your business, and just also knowing that AI is coming and you're going to have to put security in place. You can't allow human judgment and ethics to lead things anymore, right? You can't copyright laws, license material, and any IP that you have given someone explicit permission to use, right? AI is going to tear down that wall. So one of the things that I want you all to do, because cybersecurity is usually it's the big bad monster, hovering over your computer. And so if you flip the thought process and think about the fact that you've been using and training AI the whole time, it's been a part of everyone on this phone, on the call's life. Google Now, I think it's called Google Now. I think I used to have an app on my phone called Google Now. It would say, hey, you're about to leave work. Traffic is bad. Go this way. Right? Or you would use Amazon. Pretty sure we've all shopped on Amazon, and it says, hey, we see some things below this product that you're about to buy that you might also like. Right? We all have been uploading and clicking and taking surveys and feeding a model, right? You've been training AI. And what has really happened is now they have made it so that you can use it in a conversational tone on a front-face UI, right? Meaning you can type into ChatGPT and say, give me a list of, creative arts councils in Eastern North Carolina. Used to have to code that, right? So it hasn't changed that much. And so if you understand you've kind of been in it a little bit already, it won't be as daunting and as scary of a thing to step into, right? And that's kind of how it's been presented. We're heading, head first towards this AI movement. We've already all been a part of it and been in it, right? So I'm going to tell you some things you can specifically do. These things are aside from the normal things. When I say the normal things, I have a free workbook that you all can download that lists out the normal things and walks you through how to turn them on. When I say normal, I mean having a password manager, having antivirus on your phone and computer, having two-factor authentication turned on in your Google Workspace or your Office 365, right? Again, I'm not big on large lists. So what I wanted to do was provide you all a list of artistic-related data protection procedures you could do. And I can provide you all with the foundational things, or you can download it from our website. This one's going to be tough. There's AI now that can make a copy of your voice with 3 seconds of audio. Last night, I uploaded 3 seconds of audio, uploaded a picture of me. And then I told it to make a video of me dancing. I made a video of me dancing. I was singing a song. It was scary, right? And so, everyone on this call, this isn't coming, right? Like I told someone the other day, the world isn't shifting with an ing. The world has shifted with an ed, right? You can't wait to think about this differently. You have to do it now. You cannot believe what you're seeing, hearing, reading, right? I mean, deep fake videos exist, right? Like, if there's anyone on the call that's in digital media or media production, you can make a fake video of someone and manipulate their mouth, right? Again, there was a robocall going around a couple of weeks ago, and the person on the phone call you and say, hey, can you hear me? Hey, can you hear me? What do you naturally say when someone says this? Yes, I can hear you. And so that's all I need. That's all I need to manipulate your voice so I can then get into your Wells Fargo voice activated password once I get into your email and, do my stuff. So my point is, We are now at a point in technology where you literally can't believe that what you're looking at is an original video, or what you're hearing is the original audio, or what you're reading wasn't created by an AI, right? And as the creative industries adopt AI, I guess they'll have to figure out ways to watermark these things, I guess, right? Like, how do you drop audio in the audio that says this is real audio, right? That's another conversation, but proactive measures. It always costs more to fix things when they happen afterwards. I don't think anybody on this call runs into the back of a car at a stoplight and then calls Geico to get insurance. I think we all have insurance before that, right? There's not an industry or there's not a facet of life that doesn't cost more if you handle it after it happens, right? And so I just urge you to think about that when you are deploying systems that may cost a little bit of money, or that you don't have in the budget, or I don't want to pay for this, but we need it, et cetera, et cetera. You'd rather pay $19 a month for something than to pay me $46,000 to fix it afterwards, because it could cost that much. Pay attention to the security of your payment gateway. That is probably the absolute most important thing I could tell anyone on this phone call. Many people assume that these payment gateways have the highest level of security activated. They don't. That doesn't mean they're not giving you security, but a lot of these systems operate on a shared model. And that means we're going to do our job to secure the data and servers that you're using, but it's not our job to secure your account. We're going to make sure that Stripe's servers are secure, but your account is your account. And so many of these systems have chargeback insurance. They have fraud settings. They have capabilities to detect if a credit card did 10 transactions each 3 seconds apart from each other, right? Like, there are a lot of ways to implement notifications and proactive measures in these payment gateways. Most people create a PayPal or Stripe account, plug it into their website, and off to selling they go. That is not the way to do it. Okay. Best practices for password security and two-factor on your account. I like to tell people your birthday is not a password. Means your child's birthday, your grandma's birthday, your aunt's birthday, your cousin. No, nobody's birthday is a pass should be a password because I can figure it out. You should use statements, right? I like to eat peanut butter ice cream. Right? Your password would be ILTETPBIC, right? Like, that's the best thing to do instead of trying to make a complex 17 character key password that you're not going to remember, right? No one knows you like peanut butter ice cream except for you. So don't use common things. Don't use common things. Don't use your birthday. Don't use your address. Don't use the last four of your car's license plate. Don't use anything that is publicly available information. And basically, that's probably any facet of your life and anyone in your household's life. Right? Get creative. Right? If you want to get creative and it has to be attached to your children, maybe make your PIN code their birth time backwards. Right? Those aren't records that people can really get to. Like, what time was your child born? Right? So, best practices are not using the same passwords for everything. If you are using your same password to pay your car payment that you're using to pay your HOA bill, probably shouldn't be related, right? You should have a set of passwords for your house and a set of passwords for your financial things. And if you're like me, then you got a set of passwords for your kids, right? You can have that same password and maybe have some variance in it. But if you use a password vault, then you're never typing in a password. I haven't typed in a password in maybe 3 or 4 years on any machine that I own because I use a password vault. Those systems, I'm assuming, allow you to make projects. You can probably make those projects private or public or share them with people. This is when you should implement the idea of least privilege. In the cyber world, that's supposed to be two cool words together. What it really means is I'm only going to give you enough access to do what you need to do right now. If you need to do something else, ping me later. I'll give you that access. But what I'm not going to do is give you blanket admin from the beginning. That is a no-no, right? And that's easier said than done, right? We're all operating under limited time. We're all operating under limited budgets. Sometimes we want to see what the person can do. We want to see the project, or we have a deadline and I need to download the documents and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For things to move securely, more secure, they have to go slower. And what you'll find in doing that is the processes and procedures for your business will begin to mature. If you think about moving in a more secure manner, and it just means, no, I can't get this to you by Friday. I'll have to get it to you by next Wednesday. So making sure that least privilege is enabled. That means, yes, we could have decided that we're going to work on the project. You're going to do the graphics, and I'm going to write the copy. Well, I'm only going to give you access to this one folder for this one project. Like, I'm not just going to make you a user of my entire account, right? You should never do that. This one really was really interesting to me when I was doing research on these things. Be cautious when sharing high-resolution images of your artwork. I would assume, and maybe someone can enlighten me at the end, I would assume is because of higher resolution images have higher DPI, and it just makes it easier to insert malicious things into the files. Pictures have code attached to them, right? You all know there's metadata attached to an image. When you take a picture on a phone, you can actually look at the information on the picture, and it will show you the phone type that was used to take it, the computer, the longitude and latitude of the image, et cetera, et cetera. Of the longitude and latitude of where you were when you took the picture, right? Pictures have information attached to them. And so I'm assuming, right, because I'm not an artist, I'm assuming that this is a something that hackers can would be able to maliciously take advantage of, right? Watermarks and inserting things into images. If you have licensed content, like I said earlier, gave someone explicit permission to use something. Maybe those platforms have notifications to let you know when someone is using it inadvertently or in the improper manner. You have to monitor that. You have to monitor because again, you now have to think about where's the stuff going to end up in? When I say stuff meaning pictures, videos, copy, playwrights, anything that's of a creative manner, right? Because you have to think about it. If Adobe allows you to type in, I don't know, right? Show me a lion with a short mane frolicking through a field in East Africa, and I get a picture in less than 10 milliseconds, that those images have to come from somewhere, right? And that's what when you're gonna hear people saying, train AIs, train the AI, train the AI, train the AI. What they really mean is continuously pump information into it. Now, that's important for you all because IP is attached to what you all are pumping into it. And so, what does that mean for me from a security standpoint? What does that mean for me from a standpoint of being of being paid out for things that are that have cost to them that people are paying for, right? How does it mean for me being compensated? And that will ultimately be an end result of you finding wanting to find out, hey, where's my data going to end up at? So as I stated earlier, we have a workbook on our website. The website is right here on the screen. And it's a free workbook. It does two things. One is it allows you to assess how you're currently moving through cybersecurity from a business and personal standpoint, right? It gives you a score and it tells you if you're doing terrible and you got to go to cyber detention, or if you're doing great and you don't need me, right? And then it also allows you to deploy a VPN, a password manager, antivirus, and how to turn on your two-factor authentication, right? So those things that I said that you just absolutely need, and the things that I think if you have a business in this country, you should have turned on, because now that I think about them, I mean, they maybe are the cost of a drink, one drink at a bar, right? I mean, these you may have to spend 30 or 40 or $50 a month to turn on some kind of cyber, right? It's not possible to not have any. It's not responsible to not have any either. So again, this is on our main homepage on our website. If you go there and click on that, we'll get that sent out to you. It's very readable and very easy to digest. Are there any questions for me? If no one has questions, I'll pick somebody like we're in school. I'm kidding.
Yes,
Oh, the
I
kidding, not kidding.
yeah, I know that Jackie and Adriana will have some questions. Oh, I think Stephanie, that you guys are.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you so much for the information, Torrance.
No
Very,
problem.
very helpful. I have recently been contacted by two different friends saying that they've received emails from me. And when I asked for the specific sender's address, it's totally not mine. So I don't think they're sending them from my account. So I'm wondering, how can you stop that? They're using my name. So it appears as if it's me. They're sending
Right.
some, I don't know what the email is even about, but so I don't know if I can even know where they got it from, so much going on.
So the first place to begin with email is basically to turn on email security records, right? And 86% of anything that happens cyber related starts in an email.
Okay.
Most email, so the same way that a website address has HTTPS in the browser, and that means that the website is secure, right? There's the ability to turn on that same record in your email. And so your hosting provider, you turn it on in there. And that means either Google Workspace, Office 365, GoDaddy. There are three types of records. I won't bore you with trying, give you the acronyms of them, but it's basically turning on an SSL certificate for your email. When you send an email, it attaches a text file to it and says, this email is coming from this person. Another person receives it, their email system downloads that text file and said, this email really came from Stephanie, right? And so there are ways you can thwart those, and those are free. 85% of people don't have those email records turned on, and they're literally free to activate.
Okay, now let me just say this. I don't necessarily operate as a business per se. Now, this is just
Right.
my regular Gmail account. Does that work for that?
So what that person
These
could, it does.
records, security
Well,
records.
so not in the same way. What the hacker may have been attempting to do is they maybe just be sending emails and just typing your name in the display name. And oftentimes when you have uneducated individuals of things to look for that's malicious in an email, they'll see your name and go right down to the button and click on whatever the button is. Right,
Right.
right, right. So it's really nothing you can do about that, to be
Okay.
honest. Right, I could go to Gmail right now and make a new email, type the display name as Stephanie C. Simone. Right, like I could do that right now and send. The problem with that is at some point, that means that they have people in your contact list. Where are those people at? Are they in your CRM? Are they in your email? Are they in your text message? Because they retrieved their contact information from somewhere, right? So That's the that that's probably the next thing for you to think about is where are those contacts at? Like, how would the person who's when and
So they're
maybe
not necessarily they're not necessarily getting them from my address book.
well, they could. It depends. That's what I'm saying,
I'm
right?
sorry, would they be getting them?
Well, where are they at? Are they in your address book? Are they in your text message? Are they in your iCloud? Do you have them on some, my business CRM.com website? Are you using a CRM website? Where are those actual contacts at? And then that's what needs to be secured. No
Okay. Thank you so much. I
problem.
appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a great question to, and I think that's probably where I also, Stephanie, have kind of experienced a similar type of situation, whether it's me receiving an email from someone and then kind of realizing like this is not the person I think is emailing me, or just as you mentioned, Torrance, how email can be that first step for many people in getting their information potentially compromised. So
Right.
I am curious, both from an individual standpoint and as a business, what is maybe one red flag or kind of a list of things that people should be looking out for to help identify a scammer type email or even messages on social media, and ones that you know just like don't interact with them, leave it alone. This is probably scam.
Right. So I have two to look out for, and one is just like, don't open emails that you're not waiting on. Right?
That's
Like,
a very good tip. Yeah, you were like, I'm not even supposed to be getting something, so I'm just not even gonna interact with
you've
it.
never been to Bath and Body Works ever. Why are they sending you a coupon? You've
Yeah.
never, ever been there. Literally, which means at no point in time could you have ever given them your email. Right? But, oh man, 40% off? Click, bang, virus on your phone. Because you've never been to Bath and Body Works, and you're probably never going to go. So one thing is as simple as it is, don't open things from people you're not expecting them from, emails or text messages. I get a text message every day that said, "Hey, your shipment is late." I didn't even order anything. Delete. Some people are going to click on it and say, "What shipment? Let me read it." Oh, look at the scam text message. Okay. Right. I don't go to the second step. I didn't order anything within the last 10 days. There is no shipment coming. Right. So the first thing is don't open things from that you're not waiting on. Right. Given today's world that we're living in, if you're receiving a communication from someone, there's a 99% chance y'all had a prior communication about what you're receiving. Right. If I'm sending you an email with the funding application in it, we've talked about the fact that I'm going to send you the funding application. So it almost makes zero sense to open something from someone that you're not waiting on. You don't know them. There's no way that they have a non-malicious intent to send you an email, more than likely, given the fact that there's 286 billion spam emails sent every day, every day, every day. The likelihood that just some random guy got your email and he wants to send you a nice email and there's a link for some money in it, like, that's probably not true. Right?
You mean I didn't win a cruise? Come on. They just
The
want to send me free money. I'm all for it.
second thing, the second thing I would say that a lot of people probably don't realize that the machine has the capability of doing is if you hover over a link, any link anywhere in an email or on a website, it shows you on the bottom right, on the bottom left of your computer where you are about to click to. Most machines do, right? So if you get a, let's say you do go to Bath and Body Works and you get a Bath and Body Works coupon and you're about to click the, get coupon. At the bottom, there is a website that takes you to somewhere in Antarctica. I mean, hey, you've probably never been to the Antarctic Bath and Body Works, right? That is a big deal. Pay attention to where you are about to click. And you can literally see when you hover your mouse over it where you're going next.
Can I ask
Those are some
questions?
great points.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, okay. I do have like apps, communication apps like Line and of course, the Facebook, like LinkedIn, all that stuff that, well, Line's used more in Asia, but I don't want to get on that WeChat because, the first thing it asks is you give us permission to access your contact list. Well, just the phone number and people don't worry me as much as my notes, because under my contact, I have a lot of notes that are proprietary.
Right.
And I worry about even Facebook. I probably, I mean, to use Facebook, I probably gave them permission, but at least Facebook is in the US based. It's a US based company versus
Right.
who knows where the others could be any country in the world, which I cannot even complain,
Right, right.
So my question is, I'm really leery to even get on any, like even WhatsApp or whatever, because they all ask for permission, about the contact list. And my contact is not that simple. It's not just my name and phone number. It's got lots of other personal information.
Right.
So it's like, what do people do? I mean, sometimes you don't have any recourse. I mean, if you want to use Facebook, here, Facebook, you can access my Facebook,
Right.
contact list.
Right. Right. That's kind of a two-sided approach for me, right? Like the first one is that goes back to least privilege, right? And your issue may be an outlier because, like you say, you have extensive notes in each contact, right?
Yes.
In that case, when you downloaded or installed it for the very first time and it asked you, hey, can we access your contacts? You say no, because you're not using your contacts right now for whatever you're doing. So again, least privilege. If you get to the point in the future where you need to do something that need contacts, the app is going to prompt you and say, we don't have access to your contacts. Well, then at that point, you give it access to it, right? Give access to things as it needs it. So that's first with any application. The second thing I would say is, let's see, how do I say this delicately?
It's tough to,
Without
if I want to
inducing
use
fear,
Facebook, I have to go alone.
your life is already scattered across 25 or 30 different servers on six continents anyway. I don't add my contacts to anything. Facebook group me, but I'm also understanding of the fact that we live in a digital world. I cannot count how many times I've put my name, phone number, and email into something and hit submit. It's probably in the thousands at this point, right? So to think that I have a couple of friends. They pay their bills via paper because he just refuses to go digital. And I'm like, you have a birth certificate, don't you, man? You have a car, don't you? Right? Like your life is on the internet, man. Give it up. Right? So mitigation. That's what cybersecurity is. It's mitigation. You may have to go through and remove the PII from those notes and just leave the general stuff in there, right? Because if you need that system to access your contacts so it provides value to you, then you may have to alter the information that's in there, right? That's your form of mitigation. There's
Correct. Yeah, I do encrypt some to some extent.
nothing.
Somebody smarter, I mean, lots of people are smarter and they can't, they may, figure it out, abbreviations of two things.
Well, to your point, that's a good point. I actually said all that to say money, motivation, and time, right? Those are the driving factors behind somebody hacking into your stuff. How much money are they going to make? How much time they have, and what's their motivation, right? There's a reason that people try to hack into Bank of America every 17 seconds, right? There's probably $67 trillion in one of those accounts somewhere, right? There's a reason why they're not going to hack into my little bank account, right? Yes, sorry. PII is personally identifiable information. Things that identify you, your name, your address, your date of birth, your gender, your race, your blood type, anything that is specific to you, right? And so if you have any information in your contacts about those people under each contact, right? That's what I was saying. You can maybe alter the notes for each one. But there's really no way around it, right? There's this balancing act again of convenience and security, value and protection, which when and where do you give them up? You can't live in a world where one is forever out balancing the other one, or you're not going to get anything done, or you're not going to make any money. Right? So you just maybe have to say, okay, I'm going to pick the safest of these applications and let that only one get to my contacts because they use end-to-end encryption and these other ones don't, right? It's all about mitigation. And sometimes there isn't a perfect scenario or perfect answer, right? That would probably be the best answer I would have.
So Terrence, basically, when just about all the apps that say that to move forward, you give me or you give us permission to your contact list. So you're and I had to back out many apps for that reason. But I mean, if I go forward, just like Facebook or Instagram, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I personally don't use anything. If something says we have to have your contacts, I'm gonna hit that little X button, and I guess I don't use this.
That's
And
right.
that's me
That's right.
personally, right?
But like Facebook, I think LinkedIn, in fact, LinkedIn, I mean, it's like I has 100 people like say, Grace, you sent me LinkedIn to invite me. And I call in again. I said, I never authorized you. They said, yes, you did. I said, I didn't. We're arguing like that. But here's another thing. So like on Facebook, I see something interesting, like a fire fighting, some product, and I clicked on it, and the next thing is I keep getting all kinds of emails from me, and I didn't give them my email address. I mean,
That's a
something
whole
doesn't get it.
different story, Grace. That
Oh,
also
okay.
has to do, and actually it ties into something you said, Torin, so I'll just bring it up real quick, is that sometimes when you opt in to one brand, I love your example of Bed Bath & Beyond, but some brands are groups. So for example, I want to say like KFC and Taco Bell are owned by the same parent company. You may have signed up for the newsletter of one, but you just gave permission for the other ones to email you too, literally by signing up to one. So that's really scary. It actually goes into another territory because then we'd have to talk about cookies and how your data is tracked across, different things. But I do want to make sure before we, that's a whole nother bag of chips right
Yeah,
there, another rabbit
right.
hole. I do want to make sure we do cover some of the other questions that have been coming up real quick, and then we can circle back if we still have time. So please, please, please hold on to that one real quick. But yes, that
Okay.
has to do with how your information is tracked through different places you navigate. It's a whole nother set of permissions right there too. But some of the questions that we've got, I love too what you mentioned about like the scammers and the emails and things like that. Yes, you need to hover over, never ever click. And another hot tip, kind of tying into what Torin said, you get that text message from Amazon saying your delivery's late. Go to your Amazon app, your official Amazon app. Never touch the link. Go straight to who you think it might really be from and check with them in their official account. Never ever click that link, because it's usually a scammer. And
Okay.
Amazon is going to tell you anyways when your package is on its way. Not through a regular text message. It's probably a notification. Some of the other questions that were coming through the chat. So I want to make sure we cover some of these. One of them was an easy one. Let's throw an easy one out there. So let's say we're speaking to an artist or a creative that is either unfamiliar or uncomfortable with technology. Like they just heard you talk about all these cybersecurity things, their head spinning. I don't even know where to start. Thank you, of course, that you will have like a free PDF. That's super awesome. But for anybody listening right now, what is one thing that they can do relatively easy to just safeguard their information? Would you say it is to turn on the two-step
I
factor
would.
authentication
I was
app?
thinking the phone because we don't take the phones with us. It follows you around, right? And it's basically one of your employees, it's one of your family members, et cetera, right? Like there's probably 5,000 different settings on your phone. I would say the first thing is to grab you some coffee and sit down and plan for 2 hours to go through your cell phone and make sure all the security is on, but it's probably not. That's first,
And
that
there's
coffee.
probably YouTube videos to follow on that
That costs
too.
nothing. That costs you nothing, right?
That's
That
a
that's the
super great
first.
point.
Your phone.
Another one that obviously it's super scary, maybe it ties into this. So a lot of us obviously rely on Facebook, on Instagram, kind of like what we talked about, and some of the other some of the other online ways in which, for a lot of artists, what they present online is their brand, right? And if you make it too generic, you can't connect to people. So you do have to put some sort of personal information out there. Is there one quick hot tip, besides the two-factor authentication on how people could protect their social media accounts? Obviously, there's mixed reviews on the whole doing the check mark thing. Does it work? People still get hacked, but anything you can think of that could be a relatively easy thing to do to look at.
Admin notification.
Sorry, I put you on the spot.
No, I mean I was picturing the interface of Facebook.
Or let's say Instagram. I think a lot of artists
Well,
use
they're all
Instagram.
the same. They all have a security section. They all have a
It's all
security.
Meta, anyways. Meta.
Right. Well, your security settings, right? First thing is you should get an email if you sign into another browser. Right? Like if you have your phone beside you and your computer's beside you and you sign into Instagram on your computer. Your phone should notify you, hey, you just signed into another browser, right? All of these systems track every device you're currently logged into it with, right? And so many people don't know that you could get notifications because more than likely you're signing into Facebook on your iPad and on your phone or on your computer and on your work computer, or right? Like you're on these platforms on more than one device. And so a lot of the security settings allow for you to say, notify me if something's happening on that other device. Did the password you just changed over there? Did I log out over there? Right? Like, tell me whenever something happens on my account and not just on the device I'm on. Right? That's the first place I would start.
So if they're not getting those notifications, then they don't have those settings turned on.
They don't. And that literally means someone else can, because if your password has been the same for the last 10 years and I'm signed into it and I'm in Florida on a beach, you don't know that. You literally don't know someone's been signed into your Instagram for 4 hours. Right? That's, again, that's no cost, right? It's free. A lot of these platforms, this is how you have to think about it. These platforms have put in the work, whatever that means. They put in the time, energy, and effort to get venture level, venture capital funding to build these mammoth systems that have these out-of-the-box security settings. Use the free employee. Everyone, the security settings in each of these systems you use in totality should be looked at as a free security employee.
Perfect. Another one, I'm going to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, about doing backup copies of every piece of data. And I believe this is one of our questions we received through the chat as well. So would you suggest, obviously, okay, let's be realistic, right? Some of us are dealing with gigantic video files. No way I'm gonna have two copies. I mean, I'm personally the sort of person that will have at least one copy of some of the video files, like for example, for the podcast that Jackie and I co-host, but no way that I'm gonna have two copies. Like the size of the data of those video files is huge, and the cost, obviously, of storage can be a little, prohibitive, especially for something that maybe could be theoretically obsolete, a few years down the road, or maybe not as necessary. So why am I paying for storage for things that may not still be, relevant, right? But question that I have for you, would you say a combination of, say, encrypted cloud services and perhaps like a solid state drive could be a co good combination of like keeping some of that data? Like, do you think it's absolutely necessary to have some of this offline? Or do you think, a lot of us are going to be using Google Drive, Apple iCloud, OneDrive? Like, do you think that's, as long as it's maybe not financial data, but like our general day to day, we could rely on those services?
I would say yes, and more so for me when I talk backup and business continuity and disaster recovery. I mean, you need a backup of your LLC documents. You need a backup of your state's good standing certificate. You need a backup of the fact that 20 people have sent you their resumes for the last 5 years because you might have to hire one of them next month, right? You need backup of your operational things. To your point, Google and YouTube and LinkedIn and Vimeo have these mammoth platforms that let you upload 5 gigabyte file in 10 minutes. Like, why would I take my expensive Mac and put 10 files on the hard drive and that's all it can fit? And now I can't use my computer anymore. It's from speaking from experience. I wholeheartedly recommend external drives. I mean, the cost of storage has went down drastically. You can get a 10 terabyte external drive for a couple hundred dollars, right? And so, to your point though, you don't keep data forever. You don't keep copies of things forever, right? You have some sort of sliding. I'm always going to get rid of the videos that are over 6 months old. I have, they're on YouTube and they're on Vimeo. I don't need the video on my computer, right? And that's just part of your procedure, right? Well, you say, we're going to get rid of videos older than 6 months every 3 months, right? Because again, you're thinking about disaster recovery. And that is going to lead you to a slower, more mature walk to more effective business processes. Think about security. I have to move slower. And I'm okay with that, right? Being insecurity. And, because I've always been, even when I used to work in the government and people would, oh my God, it's a fire, IT, oh my God, it's IT, you should be able to fix it. I would just be able to say, hey man, this is cyber. Just gotta wait. I don't know what to tell you. Right? So, think about that mind when you're building your business, because I mean, I would think you're wanting to build something that's of longevity, right? And so you got to go slower. Implementing security is going to make you go slower.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And I am definitely personally someone who uses Google Drive a lot, have something on my hard drive and external hard drive. But for the business owners or artists or just any individual who is storing backup digital files, what would you say would be your biggest piece of advice for preventing like loss or corruption of those files? Especially when it comes to like creative assets or sensitive information.
Out of the box. That means go to your business directory, right? Whether you're using Google Workspace and Drive, or you're using Microsoft Office and OneDrive, there are more than, again, they're more than likely out of the box security settings that you don't have turned on. Most people think that you actually shouldn't. I think, okay, let me go back. I think you shouldn't have sharing with non-domain external users turned on in Google Drive. Think you should have some sort of ability to send people files who don't have an email from your business, right? We've all had to go to some file upload link before that someone sent us, right? That's because they don't let you create a document in their Google Drive and just hit share and type in anybody's email address. Right? That is a setting that's in Google Workspace that's off for 90% of people, sharing with non-domain external users. And what that means, if you turn it on, is if I turn it on, only people with at cybershieldsecurity.co emails could open the document. Right? Now that may prohibit you based on how you work. Right. But to answer your question, what I would say is go into the security settings in your business directory, whether that's GoDaddy, Google Workspace, or Office 365. I will bet money everyone on this Zoom doesn't have some things turned on that come with what they're currently paying
Oh, I know. I know I don't.
I was just
Right.
thinking that. I'm like, I definitely have not turned that on. And I
Yeah,
think
I
that's such a
don't have
great
that turned
point.
on. Yeah.
I think that's a great point of like even for some of them, they're like, oh, I'm sure Google just has it figured out. And of course they're looking after my best interests. Like just have knowing that they have security measures in place, but I guess taking that personal responsibility as the user of that's a great reminder or even just first piece of advice of okay, we need to go in there and we need to make sure, okay, are these settings truly what I want, are truly what I need based off of the information that I am trusting this Google Drive to have access to.
If you
And it
don't
may be
have
something,
time,
especially it may
you
be something too as a
don't have
business
time
owner of separating, okay, in this
to
email
do it. In this email
address,
address.
it's super high security. This is where I'll keep other permissions that no one else can see. And then this is the email address that when I'm sending files, okay, it's slightly less risk if this image that I created for social media gets shared or something like that. So also I think as a business owner, just as an individual, say, okay, this is where I'm gonna keep my super high security type documents, make sure it's really locked down, and then these can be a little more flexible with those securities.
Another recommendation I have for that is shared drives. Google now has shared drives. You know, same way like when you're at work and you click on the little button on My Documents and you know, it's a shared drive. There is no ownership of a shared drive. It's owned by your organization. So that makes turning on security settings easier. They've made it easier. And that is just a backup thing, right? That's a backup, that's a disaster recovery thing. It is more effective to use shared drives than to use a drive folder and share it out.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah, because you could definitely make a folder that's isolated and only certain people can see it, and you can even password protect it. Because that's another thing that I don't think necessarily a lot of people realize. All these different cloud services, you can put passwords on specific documents. Obviously, Google it, YouTube it on how to do it. But you can add an extra layer of protection on top of what that service provider has already given you. So those are some great points, I think. Wrapping up, unless anybody has another question, let us know. One of the other ones that, obviously comes up in terms of, these kind of things, one of the ones you were talking about was about setting up, I'm circling back to something you mentioned, setting up payment gateways. And you had mentioned, which makes sense, a lot of us will set up a PayPal, we'll set up a thing, we scroll down and we're just like, just tell me where to accept. I just want to set this up, get it running. I want to sell my artwork, right? Or I want to sell my service. I don't want to sit around here reading 17 pages of stuff. But obviously, we are dependent on said gateways, right? And some of the permissions that we have to give, like think about it, PayPal, I mean, they have to verify you're a real person in order to prevent fraud, right? And prevent money laundering and things like that. So you do end up putting things like your social security number and your bank account number, because just like a regular brick and mortar bank, they want to know you are a real person, right? Once you set this up, right, would you say there's anything, again, of course, I'm sure you're going to say the security settings, but anything you can think of that artists can think about turning on or looking at before they start selling? Like, in my mind, based on the conversation we've been having, one of the things that comes to mind, just to kind of, kick the ball on this one, is maybe don't put all your bank accounts on it. Right? Like my mind goes to like maybe just put the one account that you want the money to go to. To me, that seems like a relatively obvious one. You don't want somebody to hack into your PayPal and see your three checking accounts, right? But is there anything else you can think of that you're like, yeah, maybe just don't put XYZ in there?
Well, what you said was least privilege, right? You're only adding the bank accounts as you need it. You may never need to add none of the other ones. So that's great that you're implementing that, right? Like that's least privilege. I'm only going to add this one bank account to PayPal because it only needs one to function, right? Chargeback insurance. I had a customer, someone hacked into their Stripe account. They were able to pull their API key from out of their insecure website. The person called me, "Hey, Torrance, the person has hacked into my account. They've already stole about $30,000 at this point." So I sign into their Stripe account and I have this up on two screens. And I'm doing my cyber stuff on one screen and I can see the amount of money that they're taking from them just continuously inch up on the other screen. And what I ended up finding out it was the hacker was disputing the charge that the owner of the account was disputing. So ultimately, they were getting the money that they stole twice.
What?
Right. So what happened was someone took an API key off of an insecure website. They then found, I don't know where they got it from, they then found an Excel sheet on the dark, on the you know, on the black market, on the black web, dark market of credit card numbers. They wrote a code, they wrote some code, and it made a malicious order on that person's Stripe account every 19 seconds. with a fraudulent card. So by the time I got it to stop, it was at about $82,000. I mean, just for 9 days straight, every 19 seconds, like a $5 order.
Whoa.
Got almost up to about 980,000. So I got it back down to 40. When I say got it back down, I submitted documentation to Stripe to show, hey, this came from fraudulent IP address. Hey, this charge happened twice in 3 seconds from the cart. I really had to do an investigation. And she still ended up owing Stripe $15,000. Now imagine if your store makes $100 a week and just somehow the next day you owe Stripe $15,000. Not 15,000 digital fake dollars, but real actual dollars.
Wow.
Yes, because she didn't have chargeback insurance. Now, I am not a fintech expert at all, right? I know software and systems, right? So I'm pretty sure there are other reconciliation and financial triggers and levers that you can tell your bank to put in place that aren't in Stripe, right? But what happened was her bank said, hey, you didn't tell us about this until the second day. So guess what? The money that they took the first day, cancel it. We're not giving any of it back to you. This was a small regional bank. It was $25,000 they took on the first day. So I already know beginning on day two, when I sit down to do my cyber stuff, that we're not even trying to uncover her $25,000 from yesterday. Like at this point, I'm just stop the bleeding because, like I said, I had it on the screen. It was going from $47,200 to $47,312 to $47,319. Like I was watching it every 9 seconds go up for a week, right? Finally got it to stop. I finally figured out what it was and I stopped it. So then we had to get them to give her the money back, right? So we found the charges, we dispute them. They disputed the disputes and ultimately doubled the money that they took. Now, I don't know if this person is still in business. I haven't talked to them for a while. I do know they were considering bankruptcy because that was the only way that the creditors and Stripe wasn't going to be able to come after her. I do know that she had investors. So imagine having to call a couple of people who've given you a couple hundred thousand dollars and say, hey, your investment is worth diddly squat. Had to service her existing customers still, right? You still have customers even though you're hacked. And the kicker, drum roll, she had to pay me almost $25,000 or $30,000 because I had to work on it for 200 hours. Yes, I didn't get up from my computer. I had to stop. I can't just go take a nap. I mean, they're currently stealing from her.
Tickle the
I had to go tickle them. Yes. Hey, you got 42,000. I'll be back when we get to 42,500.
But Torrance, I really appreciate you sharing that story. I think that is, it's such a realistic glimpse into, I think, especially cybersecurity is always one of those things where you think like, okay, well, this is never like actually going to happen to me, or like what's actually the worst that could happen? And honestly, hearing even just a story like that, that probably happens very frequently, unfortunately. But having some of these safeguards in place, like yes, having a software that costs $20 a month, it's better than not paying something for your business. But when you think of, oh, don't I wish I just installed this software for $20 a month rather than having that emergency situation, or turning on notifications that anytime a charge is made on this account, I also get an email. That's one thing that I know I've set up where it's any transaction over 1 cent, I get an email for. So if I use my business card, I immediately then get an email saying, hey, this, I don't know, charge was made at this store. And I'm like, great, looks good. Because then the second I'm sitting on my couch watching TV and I get an email about a charge, I'm like, hold on, let me look at it right now. Because if you can figure out worst case scenario, if it is a fraudulent charge, if you can immediately put in a request to your bank within 5 minutes of it happening, that's a lot easier than all of a sudden every transaction on your account. You're like, did I make this Amazon request? I don't know. And then you start questioning yourself and you're like, what am I paying for? I don't know. So yeah, so like it's, I think it's a great example to be able to show, okay, how important just taking some of these proactive steps are. to at least give you the skills and like the knowledge if something were to happen that you
It's
could at least
terrible.
identify it very early on.
It was a terrible ordeal. I mean, I think her daughter was graduating. She was literally packing to go to Morocco for 10 days. It was just a terrible time, right? But
Yep.
that's the thing. This is never going to happen at an opportune time in your life.
All right, so we hope you enjoyed this special episode where we partnered with Triangle Artworks, a local arts nonprofit, as well as Torrance Reed from CyberShield Security, and learn a new tip or two or 10 about keeping your data safe on the
There are
internet.
definitely a few action items that I'll be taking back with me. But as always, our blog will be linked in today's show notes, where you can find episode notes and links to all of our other podcast episodes.
And if you want to stay connected with us in between episodes, share your feedback, or have a question you would like for us to answer on the podcast, you can reach us through social media. I'm at AmeArt across all platforms.
I'm at J Sanders Studio across all platforms. And if you want to follow the podcast, we are at Level Up Artists on Instagram.
You can also visit levelupartist.com to get immediate access to templates, resources, and course modules to level up your creative career today.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.